Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Parliament for Manukau East for the Labour Party, and welcome to this edition of Red Alert. Many of you will have heard of the issue of seasonal workers being discussed recently in the news. Today, we are taking up the topic of Pacific seasonal workers, RSE workers, who come to work in New Zealand and the impact that that can have on Pacific communities. Pacific people don't simply apply at Immigration New Zealand to be a seasonal worker here. They're usually recruited to come by an agricultural employer who have registered with the RSE scheme, who then enter an agreement to recruit workers from overseas. My guest this morning is an expert on the RSE scheme. He has assisted many Pacific workers into employment, and his name is Sefita Hauʻuli, and he's no stranger to many of you. Mr. Hauʻuli has over 25 years of experience in the broadcasting and media sector in New Zealand. He's an experienced journalist and has worked for various media organisations, including TVNZ and Radio 531 PI Limited, and he was the founder and CEO of that radio station. He has chaired a number of boards, including chairman of the Pacific Arts Committee of Creative New Zealand and chairperson of the Pacific Health Advisory Committee at County's Manukau District Health Board. He has a wealth of experience in media, governance, management and engagement with Pacific communities. But today I'm talking to Sefita Hauʻuli in his capacity in the RSE scheme. He is the main person that looks after RSE workers from the Kingdom of Tonga. And we will be discussing a report that has come out from the University of Auckland, NZIPR, which is the New Zealand Institute of Pacific Research. And the report is called Labour Mobility in the Pacific. Welcome to the show, Sefita Hauʻuli. Can you please describe your role in RSE for us here in New Zealand?
Thank you, Jenny. Malo Lene. And there was a rather long-winded introduction, but thank you for giving me the chance to be able to play a part in this. My role in the RSE program for Tonga is as a liaison officer. That's a short title. But the long and the short of it is that I probably have to do everything that is from finding work for our workers from Tonga. And the liaison role means that I have to stay in touch with the employers, with the workers while they're here, and also the government agencies in New Zealand that support the scheme. It also means that I have to report frequently to my bosses in Tonga. The RSE scheme in Tonga has been run under the Ministry of Internal Affairs. We have a CEO, of course, and the minister. The minister at present is the Prime Minister himself, and the scheme has been running for nearly 10 years. In that time, I've seen about six or seven cabinet ministers in Tonga who have become the program leader for the RSE scheme as it operates in Tonga. So the role is as easy as meeting the guys off the flight, making sure that they get to the employer, and checking just to make sure that between the employer and the workers that the work is done, and that at the end of it they take their earnings home and leave as required under the immigration regulations. I hope that explains it.
Sefita, can you describe the success of the RSE scheme? According to this report, Labour Mobility in the Pacific, it describes various factors, a number of factors, that is the reason why the RSE scheme is successful. Do you agree with these success factors that are set out on the report? And if so, why do you agree with these factors that the report discusses?
Jenny, before we get into the success of the scheme, I think this report is very important, just to outline it very quickly. This is a very, very important document because it's a literature review of all the work that has been done, the studies that have been done previously covering labour mobility, and in particular it looked at the at RSE in New Zealand. And it also touches on the Australian scheme, but the focus was on labour mobility and the currently, of course, the RSE scheme. It's done by the University of Auckland, and perhaps it should be pointed out, of course, that your husband, Associate Professor Damon Salesa, was very much involved in getting this off the ground. And the beauty of this study in bringing all these the literature that has been made available on this is that it pointed to a large body of work that has already been done by our academic sector, and not only here in New Zealand, but across the Pacific as well, and in Australia. The literature review suggests that there are lots and lots of gaps that needs to be filled, but it also contains a lot of good data that we can go back to frequently and use that to assess the so-called success and the challenges for the scheme. Now, to answer your question as to whether it has been successful or not, 10 years now after the scheme has been running, from my perspective, and I think it is a prejudiced perspective because I was involved originally in working with the Ministry of Labour in New Zealand at that time in order to bring the scheme into place. And consequently, of course, I've been involved with it ever since. I think that there are a lot of good things that have come out of this scheme, and the triple win mandate, or the logic behind the scheme, that is that the workers win, the employers win, and the destination and the country wins, as well as our government, of course, in Tonga. Those things basically has proven to be right in that there has been wins all along the way. But as we would expect with things of this type, there will always be challenges to meet. At the present time, the number of workers out of Tonga that comes to the scheme is around 1,600, averaging about that. I think our highest was about 1,700. For last season, but over the 10 years, average is about 16. And when you assess the unemployment rate in Tonga, this is a fair chunk of our population who were unemployed or were unable to earn an income for themselves and their families. They are now in employment in New Zealand, earning sometimes up to six or seven times more than the national average in Tonga. And there is another 2,000 of us who are currently doing similar jobs in Australia. Now, if you put those two numbers together at 4,000, if you like, our productive sector in Tonga, that's a huge deployment of Tongan workers to be able to contribute to the New Zealand economy as well as to the Tongan economy, of course. So if you say, well, has it been successful? I think we have been able to find regular work and paid employment for 4,000 of our unemployed. New Zealand has benefited greatly from the contributions they have made, and I think the numbers on that will become clearer further down as we move along. But it's worth at least, it'll be close to 30 million TOP, that's Tongan Pāna, in net value going back into Tonga. And that's when you consider that our GDP in Tonga is about 200 million, that's a huge contribution. So on the financial side, yes, it has been successful. On the employment side, we have been able to say that more and more of our people are now being employed. And the report that we refer to on this, of course, does suggest that there are challenges, and we can't count our success without accepting the challenge that come with this. And the challenge, as the report outlines, is that the it is complex to try and assess the success of the scheme without taking into account the social issues that it involves in moving people from one country to another. And it's all in complexity because economic development to be sustainable in the Pacific, and particularly in Tonga, the gains from having economic rights and the economic benefits must sit equally alongside the advances in the social and in the environmental context. Now, I quoted it from the report because it does point out that there are successes that has been gained, but that there are other issues that we have yet to face.
The demand for RSE workers in New Zealand, as well as other countries, including Australia, continues to grow. Sefita, do you see this growth continuing in the near future? And would we, say, from Tonga's perspective, would Tonga be able to keep up with the demand of the continued demand for workers for the RSE scheme?
The demand for RSE workers from New Zealand is far higher than the cap that has been placed on this, which is currently at 10,500. We started off with 6,000. It's almost doubled now. And my assessment of demand by talking to employers of Tongan workers is that if they were allowed to bring in the workers that they think that they require, we could add another 30% to this number before that's in order to meet the demand. So from Tonga's perspective, my problem with this is that, and this is part and parcel of what the report has outlined, there is a challenge for Tonga if we continue to send more and more of our productive population to work overseas, because there's a whole gap that's being left in Tonga for our own requirements. You would understand, of course, that although we term these workers as people who are unemployed, most of them are actually they're subsistence growers and farmers, and they, in fact, are very core to our population in being able to drive the local economy, work their plantation, to produce food for their families. Some of that ends up in the market to be sold, but they also have a very important role to play in our social structure back in Tonga. So will the demand be met by Tonga? I think in terms of the numbers, and don't forget that we've only got just over 100,000 people living in Tonga at present. In terms of the numbers, the answer is yes, we can. But can it continue to grow unfettered? The answer is no. And I think the challenge on this issue is not so much for New Zealand, it is more for the source countries. And in Tonga's case, we need to look very closely at how much more and how many more of our population we can afford to send overseas without negatively impacting in our own economy, and as well as the political and the social imperatives that will arise out of this. I think the demand from Australia is very similar. In fact, Australia has an uncapped demand. And so to that end, 10 years ago, we were finding it difficult to find work for our unemployed population, and particularly for our young people leaving school. The future suggests that the demand is unlikely ever to be met. So there's a lot of work available now, but it's a matter for our own government. And I'm saying that Tonga needs to have good policies and a very good vision and outlook for their own requirements in order to maximize the full benefit that labor mobility brings on board.
What are the key drivers of RSE, Seth?
There is a political imperative here too, because we, in Tonga, for instance, we're finding that our unemployed are getting younger and younger. There is social issues that comes with our unemployed youth, and I think the potential for social disruption and social dislocation because our young people are able to find jobs, this could well be a solution for it. In other words, that they know that there is work that they can do, that we can send them overseas to be able to earn money on behalf of their families. But I don't want to oversimplify that. It's just important to realize that there are political imperatives here for our Pacific countries, and particularly in Tonga's case, to ensure that there is social stability back home. The social imperative is one of the issues that probably needs to be addressed more clearly. Moving this number of people outside of or away from their families, and the parting of ways between husbands and wives and fathers and their children will always cause some form of disruption. And so to that end, again, we come back to the need for the Pacific countries, and in the case Tonga needs to do things for themselves in order to address this issue. We, for instance, we have asked over the last two or three years for the appointment of a social worker to be linked to our office back in Tonga, so we can tap the responses as well as the complaints that will come from either wives or husbands whose partners are away at work. And the social imperatives is an issue that needs to be addressed. And this should be done by not just by Tonga or the source countries. It should also be looked at by the destination countries such as Australia and New Zealand. It has to be done jointly. Otherwise, we will find that the so-called triple win begins to sound hollow.
The report also discusses remittances as poverty alleviation at home. And, I mean, this is at home, meaning the home country. So in this instance, it'll be Tonga. Can you describe how do Tongan RSE workers usually send funds back home? And do they continue to do this with in terms of the remittances? Are there any issues with sending money back home? And if so, what are the issues?
The funds are being remitted in a number of ways. The traditional way, of course, was to go to the bank, and they will transmit funds across in form of a draft. But over the years, there have been other ways of remitting funds back to Tonga, and some of those were informal arrangements between privately owned finance interests in Tonga and their partners here in New Zealand. Probably one of the better known international companies, of course, is Western Union. There is another one called MoneyGram, the only commercial bank in Tonga at present that is has a branch here in New Zealand is ANZ, or perhaps we should say the ANZ probably is the biggest bank around the Pacific, mostly used by our workers. But recently, the banking sector has insisted that the funds being remitted to the Pacific be more formalized, and they have now, with government's help, passed regulations to outlaw a lot of our informal arrangements that existed in the past. So we've seen almost the overnight disappearance of people like I'm trying to remember the names because they're no longer in business, but we had a Tongan company that was operating out of New Zealand sending money directly to their branches in Tonga using the banking system, but the banking system has actually closed their accounts and they can no longer operate. The probably one or two informals that are still around, they're not operating illegally as such, but the way the regulations are formulated now, it means that they are finding it difficult to continue to operate normally. So upside of that too is that the Tonga Development Bank has now launched a money remittance product of their own. It's called Awe Pānga Pau. So Tonga has now moved to formalize a remittance formula and to get Tongan RSC workers to be able to send their money home safely, legally, and promptly. And this product is now currently being tested by a number of employers who are sending money home on behalf of their workers. So the system is undergoing an overhaul, but the banks remain the main source of sending money home. But you'll understand, of course, that the ANZ won't have branches in our outer islands. And one of the benefits of having Tonga Development Bank in the scheme at present is that they have far more branches in Tonga, in Vava'u, Hapai, and the outlying islands, as well as, of course, as in the main center. The idea behind sending money home, of course, is that the workers here will send money home, some on a weekly basis, some fortnightly, but others have had a saving scheme in which they could save their funds and then take them home with them. The amount sent home varies greatly from weekly of say 150 to 200, and some would take a lump sum home, sometime between 12-15,000 for those who have worked hard and saved hard, and others would take home between 5 and 6. So those are the amounts required, and that gives you some idea of the amount of money they earn, but the way that it's being remitted back to the Pacific. Quite a number of them would hand carry their funds across. Quite legally, they can do so as long as they declare it.
In your opinion, Sefita, what recommendations would you make to improve the RSC scheme?
I think my recommendation to improve the RSC scheme should be aimed more at Tonga, because we do have some challenges ahead of us. First and foremost, we need a 10-year outlook or longer, because labor mobility is going to be here with us, and RSE is only a small part of it. Without policies, the benefits from the RSE for Tonga and labor mobility in general are unlikely to be fully realized. So government has a job to do, and that is to use the last 10 years to find ways and means of improving the scheme so that they can get the benefit themselves. And the second thing about this too, of course, is that our population would be quite different from the population of the rest of the Pacific. And the beauty of this study that has been done, that the document that we referred to earlier, is that it outlines steps that Pacific countries can take in order to get the maximum benefit from labor mobility. The demand, for instance, for more skilled workers to be able to be supplied from the Pacific suggests that not only will we bring our unemployed and our semi-skilled workers or unskilled, we are now going to lose some of our skilled workers, because they will have two options: to work in the Pacific at a much lower rate of pay, or to come to New Zealand and get 10 or 12 times what they would earn back home. So for these things, I think Tonga needs to have a plan, and it needs to be well thought out, and it needs to be supported by resources in order for it to be able to work. If we just continue to do this on a willy-nilly basis, on a day-to-day, year-to-year basis, without a formal, well thought out plan for the future, we will pay a heavy price for it. Those are the things that I think that needs to be done. For New Zealand, I think that it's a different set of circumstances for them. They have choices. They can go to other countries to get their labour if that's what they want. I think Asia is looking with envy at what is being done here in the Pacific. They have a huge population that they can come to New Zealand if an agreement like that were to take place. But I think for the Pacific, and particularly in Tonga's case, you need to actually have a long-term plan and make it work for your population. The economic imperative is clear. This is about families earning more money for themselves where previously they had not been able to. I think that the scheme offers this, and for individual families, some members are able now to earn money to be able to send home. For Tonga's economy, as far as that's concerned, we are now getting our unemployed being able to find jobs, although it is overseas. For New Zealand, for instance, we're able to get workers to do work that New Zealanders are either reluctant to do or unable to do. So in New Zealand's case, the economic imperative is that our horticulture and our viticulture sector has been able to get full benefit out of a steady supply of labour. The triple win, of course, suggests that in all of this, New Zealand wins, and so would Tonga be. The employer wins because they're getting their businesses being, they're getting labour for their businesses. But also that the workers themselves are getting paid and are being looked after while they're here, so everybody wins under those circumstances. For the seasonal worker, I think the political imperative is that they'll be seen as very good employees, and that they also want to make sure that there's continuity of work if they are invited to come back year after year. And of course, they will pick up leadership skills while they're here in New Zealand. And also in their relationship with other workers from the Pacific. So, again, the environment in which the scheme is being deployed here in New Zealand suggests that New Zealand and Australia will gain largely from allowing this to take place. I think it helps to consolidate the relationships between the Pacific and our neighbours and the two major countries. And it also offers a chance for New Zealand to be seen as a respected and a caring leader in the region.
The Labour Mobility in the Pacific executive summary, it concludes by stating, and I quote, "In summary, while it is clear that labour mobility, and particularly RSC in New Zealand, provides people from the Pacific with the economic right to work in a developed country, it is less clear if this compensates for their loss of social and other rights in the destination country. It is important to address this issue in all of its complexity, because for economic development to be sustainable in the Pacific, the gains from having economic rights must sit equally alongside advances in the social and environmental context." And from myself, in terms of the fact that RSC policy was developed and implemented initially by the Labour Party way back in 2006, I think these are questions that we as policy writers and as decision makers need to discuss and to grapple with and to come up with possible ways of addressing. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of Red Alert Radio. Malo obito, to ofa.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.